we are not only going to be India's Silicon Valley, we will also be India's Cerebral Valley, as the new AI hub in Silicon Valley is called.
Absolutely.
Okay. But I have to ask you, Priyank, you know, what more can the government do in terms of encouraging, you know, this new ecosystem? We have Mahesh on the panel who will take us through how industries also are adopting generative AI significantly. But from a government point of view, what else can be done?
So we are doing three, four very important things, which I think is crucial to the ecosystem. Number one, we are heavily concentrating on skills. Mm-hmm. The AI adaptability in skilling, is highest in the world. So whereas, if my data is correct, the AI skills adaptability, or the AI adaptability in US, is close to around 31%, and internationally it is 27%, whereas in India it is 57%. And it is led by Bengaluru. So we understand, the government understands, that the foundation for any innovation that needs to be happen through skills. So we are heavily focusing on skill development in emerging technologies. We have formed a skill advisory council, which is talking to industry and trying to understand what is it that they require within their sector for us to ensure there is nurturing of talent, leadership, incubation, and also innovations, number one. Number two, we are coming up with centers of excellence across sectors. So the previous panelists, when they were talking about health, AI in the health sector, we are coming up with a center of excellence in health sciences, life sciences, and medical products, where startups can come and experiment or incubate with us. So irrespective of the sector, whether it's gaming, whether it's AVGC, whether it is wireless technologies, we are game for that. So we have these various centers of excellence that are coming up. Number three, we are also trying to come up with a very disruptive public procurement policy. Sometimes what happens is the startups can be as disruptive as they want to be, but if they don't have a client, it's very difficult. So why can't government be their first customer? And for scaling, if it's going to be, it's going to have a huge social impact, government is the only place where they can scale. So you have a health product that needs scaling. So the government is going to play a role in that, wherein in this public procurement policy, we give opportunities to startups to come and pilot with the government. And number four, we have something called the Global Innovation Alliance, where we have partnered with 33 countries. So startups that are disrupting the ecosystem right here in Bengaluru or in the country, we give them networking access, market access to these countries, to our partner countries also. Like I said, the talent is here, the innovations are happening here, the IPs are being generated here, but the market access and adaptability is there as well. So through our Global Innovation Alliance members, we will be ensuring that the startups that are here get networking access, market access, funding access abroad for 33 countries also. So we have kept it very simple. These four, five things we are doing to ensure that we maintain our leadership position in this sector.
Mahesh, some very interesting data points from the minister on why, you know, the city has what it takes to emerge as India's startup AI hub. But, you know, you've also released a report today that talks about how AI can turbocharge India. And, you know, that was a crazy statistic, right? It can add almost $1 trillion, the application of generative AI by enterprises. If you can quickly tell us, you know, if this is already happening, has it moved from mere proof of concepts to actual application?
Yeah. So I think we've done a deep dive. I think the report is now distributed, so we'll really love all of you to read it and give us feedback. But a few facets of that. One, to your question, Chandra, we did a survey of 200 C-level execs, kind of getting a state of the union of what's happening. I think right now, huge amount of optimism. Almost 82% feel that it will impact their business positively. When I say it, I mean generative AI will impact their business positively. But the flip side is 3 out of 4 are still confused on various things. Where will the value come from? what are the use cases which they should deploy? How should they build it? How should they protect against hallucination and all of the other data privacy, you know, concerns? Also, the cost. It's a very dynamic equation right now. We talked a lot in one of the earlier panels on GPUs and the cost and the changing equation. So should you use OpenAI or, you know, should you use open source models? What should you do? So there's a lot of thinking in the report, which you'll see about what's happening in India today, where the execs are, where the boardroom is. That's one part of it. Then we conducted what I think is the first deep dive into the GDP impact of generative AI. So our prediction is, and it's there in the report, the calculation is also there. There's a very detailed calculation in the annexure. You should take a look at that. We think that over the next 6 years until 2030, it will add cumulatively between $1.2 to $1.5 trillion in GDP. And again, there's a sectoral breakdown of that. So massive amount of impact possible across, you know, different sectors. And last but not the least, there's a very big agenda in terms of the regulatory, the policy agenda and the regulatory aspects of this, right? And we talked a lot earlier. There's probably four things which are important. We've discussed it, I think, all day today. There's chips, there's data, there's talent, and then there's distribution, right? So we talked a lot about chips earlier. I won't go into that. Talent, obviously, even the minister just cited that. That's huge. But data is the one which I think will actually get us ahead. You know, if you go back and think about what happened in, you know, some of the early revolutions in AI, it was the ImageNet challenge where you tagged a lot of images collaboratively and then you used, you know, CNNs to do it. I think the same thing is going to happen. Now think about in India, if we could have privacy-preserved data sets being made available, right? It could be healthcare, it could be UPI, etc. If you could anonymize those, make those available, and then you train models on that instead of just World Wide Web, you have much better foundation models.
Right.
So there's a very big aspect, you know, of that as well.
Dilip, you know, since he said sectoral, I want to ask you about what Manipal hospitals, what are you doing as far as AI and healthcare is concerned, you know?
Yeah.
Have you already seen some applications? Hopefully doctors are not using ChatGPT to write prescriptions.
Yeah, so I know, thank you, Chandra. I know Bangalore would not make fun of Manipal, I'm sure. That, it's a pleasure to be here. And, you know, you're absolutely right. We, you know, the previous panel talked about the applications of AI in healthcare. I just want to give a couple of examples where, you know, we are using it. For example, the conversations, the interaction with patients and their families oftentimes is through conversational AI or chatbots is something that we are already put in place.
Right.
We actually, you know, we are the first one in India to use wearables to track patients outside of the hospital, you know. Often, let's take an example of a patient who had an angioplasty, you know, an interventional cardiology procedure. He or she needs, to, by the third day, they are home. But then at home, they need to be active, they need to exercise, you know, they need to do stuff. So we, along with, at the time of discharge, we give them a wearable that, you know, which...
This is your own wearable device.
No, I mean, we have a venture with Google Health. We give a Fitbit. And this is a unique, you know, collaboration that we have with Google Health. We give a Fitbit to them and, you know, they wear it. And we have an app which tracks them. And, you know, we sort of prod them when they have been inactive for a long time. And also maybe give a nudge when they have to take the medication. And what we are finding at the back end, Chandra, is that people who are on wearables and on this tracking is recovering much faster, much, you know, painless after a joint replacement surgery, for example. So this is already proven. Now, you know, this is external facing with the patient. Now look at what happens in the hospital. It is now quite common to run all the imaging, the radiology, you know, the output through an AI layer, not replacing a doctor, but that AI layer could flag areas of concern and, you know, send the images to the doctor. It increases the patient safety. So that again is something which is already there. But I just also want to take a minute to sound a word of caution that, you know, we all day we talked about the potential and positives about AI. Healthcare is one where we have to be a little careful. We would need a framework. We would need guardrails. The reason is that unlike most other many other sectors, we are dealing with vulnerable people here. That, you know, it's a very different context compared to somebody in hospitality or financial inclusion. So we have to use AI and should always be cautious that we take the business angle out of it, that, you know, I don't as Manipal or I don't as healthcare sector do not use AI, which because it also promotes further consumption of service and revenue. So that
right.
is a line that we have to draw. I'll take a minute to give an example that, you know, all of us patronize most of the time the same hospitals year after year. That, you know, if you all think back, we go to the same hospital, you know, and whatever is the incident, sometime maybe for a fever, sometime for something more serious, but at the look at over a period of 5 years, the data the hospital has is across the spectrum of therapies.
Correct.
So one or two times you may have been admitted, but most of the time an outpatient consultation, we have data on blood reports, images, and you know the medication that you have taken. Now AI could sort of predict what is, looking at the your clinical pathway over the last 5 or 6 years, what could lie ahead. So, but you have to be careful in using that information. Take, you know, that is still with one patient. Let's stretch it one more. A lot of families go to the same hospital. A lot of extended families go to the same hospital. So if I look at a case where, you know, maybe 30 people in the family or a large extended family data is there in the hospital, you might use the data, you could technically use the data of an elder sibling or a parent or a grandparent to predict what can happen to a younger person. But should you do it? You know, where does the ethics come in that? And, you know, how do you do it with conscience and not with a business aptitude or a business motive is something that we have to be careful. So healthcare, I would only argue that is one where we have to use AI with some sensitivity and guardrails.